right, well, let's keep rolling then, shall we? Hi, it's John Williams, and this is WGN Radio. This is my Saturday show. I'm on Saturdays from 1 until 3. We made a little room for the Wildcats. I was hoping to come on after a dramatic double overtime win. Didn't work out that way, so that's the way it goes. Rob Hart will be doing news here in a little bit. Rob, you'll be on at 1:30 with the latest and the greatest, correct?
Certainly. It's snowing on the East Coast. I don't know if you knew that, John, but apparently this affects life in these United States from coast to coast when it snows in the Acela Corridor.
Does it we have cancellations at O'Hare and Midway, maybe?
Well, that's the one tangible effect on Chicago, is that it's messed up the air travel network. So we do have some cancellations and delays at O'Hare and Midway for all flights going east. But I did get the sense just from bouncing around that all national newscasts have kind of turned into
yes,
national broadcasts of local news. I felt like I was watching WNBC TV in New York this morning when the Today Show was on.
I have mixed feelings about that, because I know we live in flyover land, and we're Chicago, we're Minneapolis, we're St. Louis, we're Milwaukee. The whole cities and people live there, and they're not having that weather. And yet we're being subject to it by anybody who's broadcasting from the East Coast, which seems to be everybody, right?
Right.
But more people do live on the East Coast than live in Chicago and Milwaukee. So I give you that. But it's like they've never seen snow before. It's like, you know, I think if the roles were reversed, we wouldn't be that overwhelmed by this thing. You know, it is weird to see it piling up in Washington, D.C., though, isn't it? And the video that you knew you were going to see, and it was the first video we saw after that first glaze of ice came up through Nashville and Lexington and Louisville and then into the Eastern Corridor there, it's the cars doing the slow motion ballet back down slight inclines. You know, there's just a little hill and a car is trying to go up, and now it can't make it, and now it's sliding ever so gracefully sideways, backwards, into another car, and then into a telephone pole.
That's always painful to watch, because it's like, no, no, no!
And you can watch it, because nobody gets injured in these things. The car's doing 7 miles an hour, there's no stopping it. It's just going to keep going, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, the only one who gets the only people who really benefit is Gerber Collision and Glass.
I know. You just think this is bad for the insurance companies. This is bad for everybody involved. But some guy somewhere is going, this is what I've been waiting for.
Yes, this my whole year revolves around this snowstorm.
Well, ask Lou Manfredini and people that own or run hardware stores. The one near me, I feel bad for them. They've got snow throwers and shovels and rock salt. I am still using last year's salt. I haven't even needed it all, you know? We haven't spent any money on winter yet, so I guess out east you're going to be spending it big time now.
Remember when they used to send me out during snowstorms way back when, and it was a year where winter started late, and a snowstorm came in overnight. I was in Geneva talking to a guy who just plows parking lots, and he was happy as a clam because he was finally making some money.
Yeah, and I try to resist being the guy that calls friends, you know, in Arizona when it's cold or in Washington, D.C. when it's snowing, because they'll give it to us. If I live in Minneapolis, you live in Chicago, and they'll be happy to remind us that our weather sucks sometimes. I try not to be the guy that returns that favor. But right now, I guess if you knew somebody living in North Carolina or Virginia or Maryland or Washington, D.C. or New Jersey, you could probably do that. So here's what I have in mind for the show today. We're here until 3 o'clock. I've got a couple of lists. I don't do a lot of lists, but just some information about who goes to see movies and how well movies are doing. We'll get into that after 1:30. I was looking at Glenn Frey's musical track record. Last Sunday, Glenn Frey passed away, and it was surprising to a lot of us. David Bowie and then Glenn Frey. And this week we've all been listening to, and by the way, downloading and buying a lot of Glenn Frey and Eagles music. He's having a banner week. They always do when they leave us. Rolling Stone just put up, what's your favorite Glenn Frey song? I mean, it's been that kind of week. And I was looking at the list of songs that he's been involved in over the years. If you said he was the singer-songwriter, or he sang up backup vocals with Don Henley on the Eagles, his body of work includes Hotel California, Take It Easy, Desperado, The One You Love, The Heat Is On, Lion Eyes, Life in the Fast Lane, take it to the limit, peaceful, easy feeling. Are you hearing the chorus of these in your head as I just click through them? Please come home for Christmas, witchy woman, one of these nights. I can't tell you why. Excuse me. You belong to the city, new kid in town, heartache tonight, best of my love, maybe the best one of the bunch for me. But I mean, the list just goes on like that. And it's not just me. Stephen Colbert did a tribute to Glenn Frey early this week. And I just want to play part of it for you here because I can relate so well to what Colbert said. Krista, Griff, if you've got the audio clip of Colbert, play it now.
I just want to take a minute. I was talking to these guys about it earlier tonight to talk about Glenn Frey. He was one of the original members of the Eagles, one of the founders. I just want to take a moment to thank Glenn Frey for what he gave me. And here's what he gave me. The song Desperado. You know, they know the song?
Yeah.
Desperado. Why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one. And that's what my story's about. The first slow dance I ever danced to was to Desperado. It was the eighth grade dance at our local little club, and it's where the boys just sort of come and the girls just kind of come, and nobody's on a date. You just kind of stand on either side of the room and try not to notice each other. And I didn't dance with anybody all night long, and until the very last song, and I'd found myself over on the girls' side, and the DJ goes, and it's our last song, and it's a slow one. And it puts on Desperado, which is the perfect last song in an eighth grade dance when you have danced with no one. Because I was the Desperado. And as soon as the needle dropped and Desperado started playing, a girl I already knew named Dolly Lockwood said, oh, I love this song. This is my favorite song. So I said, Dolly, I think you want to... You want to dance with me? And she said, sure. So we got up. So we got up, you know, and did the thing like this, you know. And she put her head on my shoulder, you know. And this is the first time I've ever had my arms around a girl in my entire life. And we just turned around slowly on that dance floor, not knowing where to put these, you know, and just doing this. Like that, and it was one of the sweetest, most beautiful experiences of my life. And that day, I took a small, very small step toward manhood. And it would not have happened. It would not have happened. I don't think I would have reproduced by now if that song had not played that night. So thank you, Glenn Frey.
Don't you try the Queen of Diamonds bar. She'll beat you if she's able. You're the Queen of Hearts. She's always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your
team. I love that story. Isn't that just terrific? And you can just see skinny little Stephen Colbert with his slick black hair and his glasses on, slowly turning on a dance floor. And as he was telling that story, I thought, oh, my God, he's telling my story. I had one of those. I'll bet, Rob, you must have. I'll bet many people know that feeling of being in the junior high gym, you know, pining for somebody and trying to ratchet up the courage to touch them and look at them and dance with them.
That was, for me, it was eighth grade. I think the song was Boys to Men. And oddly enough, the date this occurred was June 17th, 1994, which was the day O.J. Simpson did his freeway chase. But yes, the very awkward guys on one side of the floor, girls on the other side of the floor, and then you walk to the center, you work up the courage to ask someone to dance, and then you do that Frankenstein dance where you're not necessarily touching the other person, you just have your arms extended.
Yeah.
I still do that with my wife to this very day. She's forgiven me for it for seven years.
Who was the girl?
Oh, I don't remember.
You don't have.
I really don't.
That
because this was eighth grade, and I haven't talked to anybody from my grade school since then.
They won't have you, Rob.
Yes, they said we don't need your kind here.
Well, I have the same story, only for me it was a different song, and it was years earlier. I'm older than you, but seventh grade, maybe eighth grade. I think it was seventh grade. In fact, I'm sure of it, and it was at Manuka Junior High School, and it was, Rob, it was your scene. Boys on one side, girls on the other, lights down low. It was a Friday night, maybe a Saturday night. It was so exciting. It was the fall dance. There was a girl I really liked who really liked me. Her name was Tracy Beal. In fact, my first girlfriend, Tracy Beal, and my wife, Brenda Beal, both had the same last name, not related, but Beals have been good to me over the years. And at the last song, Tracy walked across the gym floor and said, "Do you want to dance?" And I did, and we did, and I held her in my arms, and it felt really good. Here was this warm, curvy 8th grade or 7th grade body. Tracy had come along, and it was fantastic. I just kicked myself because I had waited so long to do that. That was the last song of the night. I had to wait till the Christmas dance to do that again. And so thank you, Tracy, if you're out there, for at least walking across the gym floor and saying, "Do you want to dance?" She had her hair in an updo for that dance. Her mom and she decided, I think maybe more her mom than she, that she'd look good with her hair up, which was a little odd, but she looked great. I didn't, and it was, you know, one of those great moments in my life. I mean, you remember that moment, that dance, that song, that girl, that feeling. And I'm wondering if you have one, too. 312-981-7200. Was there a song for you and a dance and a girl or a guy, and what was that? And by the way, for some, it's probably not a good memory, right? It could be the guy you didn't like or the gal said no. And it could be that somebody told me the other day, they said he put his head in the nook of my neck. He just kind of rubbed it right in there and then thought afterwards, "We're now going steady." And she told me we weren't. I didn't want to have anything to do with him after that, but he thought that was the moment, and now we were a couple. So if there's a song that you recall that way. Oh, and by the way, I didn't tell you what my song was. Here's the song that we danced to. This, you know, we all have our own truth. This is the way I remember it. Tracy may remember it differently, but she walked across the gym floor. She said, "Do you want to dance?" I said yes, and we heard this sound.
That is why all the girls in town follow you all around. Just like me, they long to be close to you.
There we go. Spinning slowly clockwise on the Manuka Junior High dance floor, doing, as Rob Hart says, the Frankenstein.
Yes.
No, you know, no dance ability, no concept of what a dance is. I didn't even know where to put my hands, for crying out loud.
At least it was the Carpenters, which was relatively easy to follow.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was perfect. That was a nice, sweet, sappy love song. It broke your heart just to listen to it, and it brings back all of those memories, the Frankenstein. So that's that. Thank you, Stephen Colbert, for taking us down that memory lane. In the news this week, of course, it's been a lot about the Oscars. I thought it was very interesting, the interview that George Stephanopoulos had with Spike Lee, and I'll play a cut from that for you after the 1:30 edition of WGN Radio News. Rob will do that for you. I've been having this ongoing conversation with my producer and some friends, maybe you have too, about what needs to happen with Oscar membership and Oscar voting. And the potential answer is that nothing needs to happen. It's okay the way it is. It's a club of old white people who go to movies. We all do. They vote for it the way they do. And the reason that some black actors and actresses don't win is maybe because they're not as popular as the other movies. Or it may be that their absence points to something larger and needs to be fixed. In the clip, though, I'll just preview it for you here. They're talking about the Rooney Rule, and that was that in the NFL, if you were going to hear forward interview for any major positions on an NFL team, you had to bring blacks in and interview them. And membership in the NFL at the ownership level, at the coaching level, went up as a result of that. And Stephanopoulos says, are you saying we should have quotas? And Spike Lee says yes, but I'm not sure he really meant that. I don't know how you would institute a quota system anyway. The Oscars have said, the Academy has said, okay, well, here is the fix. And I think a couple of things they have in mind for the fix are very good ideas. They're so basic, in a way, you wonder why they didn't do it earlier. Why didn't they fix it a long time ago? But I don't know that there's always been this sense of urgency. Over the last couple of years, now there has been. And it's odd, too, isn't it, that don't you get the feeling that none of this would be happening at lightning speed? I mean, the Academies have been around, the Oscars have been around for decades. And then Jada Pinkett Smith goes into her basement. I don't think Will knows what she's doing down there. He thinks she's folding laundry. And then she turns on her phone camera and she just sends out a video where she says she's ticked. And maybe blacks should just go off and do their own thing, she says. Which is kind of a step backwards, but she was talking along those lines. She's upset probably because Will didn't get a nomination this year. He has in the past, but he didn't this year. And that single little video, that two-minute kind of badly mic'd amateur video, sparked sweeping changes within a week. It was incredible. I want you to see, though, some of the numbers relative to what she was saying, or hear them, and we'll do that after the news. It's 1:30. This is WGN Chicago. I'm John Williams. We're here till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's check on WGN Radio News. This is Rob Hart. Speaking of statistical information, whose birthday, born in Peoria, was 100 years ago tomorrow?
That would be Mr. Jack Brickhouse.
Hey, right. Yeah, Peoria born, and worked at the old station I used to work at, WMBD in Peoria, and then had a varied career, of course, obviously a legend in Chicago and across the country, born 100 years ago tomorrow, 1/24/16. So happy late birthday to the late Jack Brickhouse. Okay, so this is George Stephanopoulos this week, talking to Spike Lee about the Oscar controversy.
Chris Rock is a grown-ass man. He's going to do what he wants to do. And I support either way.
So you're going to be neutral. You're
I'm going to be a man square garden.
Let's talk about Cheryl Boone Isaacson. She says we need to make some real changes. She's saying she's going to take dramatic steps to change the composition.
Well, and in fact, when I received my honorary Oscar at the Governor's Ball in November, she began that night saying this is her plan. We can't say hocus pocus, presto changeo, and the membership's going to change overnight.
The numbers are kind of amazing. 94% white, 77% male.
But here's the thing, and I like to say this. The Academy, okay, my man Michael Strahan over here again, he knows what I'm talking about. This whole Academy thing is a misdirection play.
Okay, how?
We're chasing the guy down the field, he doesn't have the ball. The other guy is high-stepping the end zone, so it goes further than the Academy Awards. It has to go back to the gatekeepers.
Studios.
Yes, the people who have the green light vote. Have you seen Hamilton yet?
I have seen Hamilton.
You know the song, you gotta be in the room?
Yeah.
We're not in the room. We are not in the room. The executive, when they had these green light meetings quarterly, where they look at the scripts, they look who's in it, and they decide what we're making, what we're not making.
How do you change that?
We can eat Michael.
What is it? Hey, Spike. What do you want me to do? Go into meetings and threaten people? I mean, I'm trying to figure this out.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm using sports references.
I got you.
Do we need the Rooney Rule?
Okay.
NFL. We need a Rooney Rule. It's some type of rule.
It's a quota.
Yes. If the NFL, if a head coaching job opens up or a senior executive position, and that has increased the number of minority coaches and executives in the NFL, and that should be used.
So you got to widen the pool out.
Have to. Because we can't go to that old tired well. Well, we can't find any qualified candidates. That's BS.
I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I
Mike Lee makes that point pretty well, and it gives us a chance to play a little from Hamilton, too. But we want to be in the room where it happens. Hamilton wanted to be there when they were crafting the Constitution, and Spike Lee wants more blacks in the room when maybe movie projects are getting green-lighted. It's been hard this week for, I think, a lot of us to look at this without looking too close at the filter of your own race, isn't it? If you're defensive about this thing, then you say, oh, well, there I go being super white. And if you are accepting of this, going, oh, my God, yeah, we've got to fix it, then you wonder if you're being reactionary. You know, I mean, really, what is the truth about this? It hasn't bothered me in the past, but maybe I'm white and I don't think about my race that much. Had a conversation with, or was overhearing a conversation on another talk show with a guy, and he was black, and he said to the white person, do you think about your race? And the white person said no, and the black guy said, I think about it all the time. We think about our race all the time. So maybe it's much more apparent to blacks and blacks in the business that blacks don't get nominated or don't win Oscars as much as whites do. And so it's just hard to sort of filter this, to interpret this. Okay, so how real is the crisis? It seems to me like the greater crisis isn't that they don't get nominated or win as much as maybe the films that they would be cast in or that blacks might want to see aren't getting made. It's not that they're not deserving. It's just that there aren't enough of them in the pool to begin with. I looked up the frequency of movie going by race in America. This is a list that includes Canada. It's probably in general the same. They've lumped them together, and here's what it is. If you said, are you a frequent movie goer, meaning you see a movie more than once a month, 21 million Americans who are white say yes. 21 million white Americans will go to a movie more than once a month. Black Americans, it's 3.7. Whites, by a factor of 6, are more likely to go frequently to movies than blacks. And so my logic has been, and this may be flawed, but this is the way my mind was working this week. Well, then no wonder there aren't many roles for or movies that appeal to blacks, because it's kind of a white entertainment phenomenon. And so not that you or I go, let's go see some white people. But if there's a certain affinity there, if you say, well, that's the people that go to the movies and make the movies and the race reflects them, then that's not racist. That's almost logical. So that's kind of where I ended my thought pattern this week on this. But then I started to look at the actual list of people that have been nominated for Oscars and who have won. And it is, having said that, so I'm giving us the pass on that, right? But if you look at the numbers, it is kind of startling. And I went back 30 years. I could go back further, but really it's not much more relevant after 30 years because blacks weren't at all considered in the 60s, 50s, and even 70s. So if you go to, say, 1986, the number of men of color, blacks who were nominated for Best Actor in the last 30 years, how many black men have been nominated for Best Actor? It's 15. Now, maybe 15 sounds high for you over 30 years, but remember, you could have had at least 5 men per year nominated. So it's 15 nominations out of a minimum possibility of 150. 15 out of 150 over those years. And the wins for Best Actor, men, are 3. So say of 150 nominating possibilities, 3 times has the Academy said black men were the best actor. And then if you do it for women, it's even more lopsided, isn't it? Over the last 30 years, 6 nominations for black women and only 1 win. Black men and women have more nominations in supporting roles. 12 nominations for Best Actress and 5 wins, and 13 nominations for Best Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress, and 13 nominations for the Supporting Actor. I want to make sure I'm saying this correctly now. It's 12 nominations for Best Actress in a supporting role with 5 wins, and 13 nominations for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, with 3 wins. So only 3 times have black men won the Oscar for support, Best Actor Supporting, in 30 years. So those, so then what do you do with that? You know, I mean, it's, so that's the information. What they've decided to do, and again, I just think it's breakneck speed. It's not reckless. It's amazing, though, that they could do something this comprehensive that quickly, all based on a Jada Pinkett Smith video.
I think you keep referring to the Jada Pinkett Smith video, and I don't think that's totally accurate of the situation. Like,
you don't think that's the first domino of late?
No. I think she's part of a movement that's had already been happening online for a couple years, and she's a name, and maybe it gets a little more exposure. I think Spike Lee gives it more exposure than anybody, but I just worry that maybe you're giving her a little too much credit.
Yeah, well, I am completely...
I think she's part of a much bigger movement.
Agreed about that. But I think that thing has been on a medium simmer, you know, for the last X years. I mean, yeah, this was a conversation last year. This was a big conversation last year, too. And when the nominations came out, it was a big conversation before Jada made her video. But honestly, Griffin, I don't know that they would have made these changes... were it not for that video. You think they would have anyway, huh? You think I'm giving her too much credit?
I guess, who knows? I think so, yeah. I think the coverage that it gets in now mainstream media, like the New York Times, rather than just on blogs or websites that it might have been getting in the years past, the New York Times has been writing about it constantly, and so has every paper, and I think that is what is really making the difference.
And do you think the sort of... fix they're putting in place is good, that if you, and here's the fix, if you go 10 years and you haven't been involved in the industry, then you don't get to vote. So if you're one of those guys who made a movie with Charlton Heston in the 50s and you've still got your card and you still get to vote, you won't get to vote anymore. You either have to, you can have emeritus status, but emeritus status does not let you vote. You have to be active within the last 10 years or have been nominated or won. So, you know, Sidney Poitier would be able to vote for the rest of his life, but you have to be active within the last 10 years. If you're active for 3 consecutive decades, then you get to vote for the rest of your life. I guess your body of work gets you that. But that does exclude some people now.
Yeah. I think this is the problem with this conversation. It gets too complicated too quickly. Like, those rules make sense to me, I guess. Do you know what I mean? When you start listing winners and nominees and numbers and it gets a little heady, the real problem, I think, is more industry-wide, is what you and Spike Lee were talking about earlier, which is that just not enough movies about the... Not enough
right,
of
the movies,
these movies
aren't, getting,
aren't
made.
Getting made.
Yeah.
But, and I don't agree with your response to that, that white people are most of the people going to see movies, so why wouldn't they mostly be about white people? I sort of tacitly disagree with you on that.
Well, but I look, The Martian was a popular movie. Spotlight was a popular movie. I don't know if those are white movies or black movies. You know, they're not about race. It's just that the lead actors happen to be white guys. I don't know if that... attaches a color to that movie, right? I mean, a lot of these movies are race neutral, aren't they? If you look at the Best Picture nominees, those aren't white movies or black movies. A black person can like The Martian as much as a white person.
Of course. Of course. So, that's not... but they're being made by white people. And The Martian is actually a relatively diverse cast, but it does have a white lead and white director and writer. I think underlying your argument here is the idea that white people won't go see movies made by black people.
I think there's some truth to that.
I don't. I think you're completely wrong about that.
So, all right, so here's where this goes.
You list Spotlight as a popular movie that brought in $28 million.
You're going to kill me on this.
Straight
Out
of Compton
you?
Made $200 million this year.
I double-checked your numbers because I didn't believe it. So you'll forgive me if I have the actual numbers in front of me. Okay. Spotlight has made $32 million domestically and internationally. It hasn't even made $1 million internationally.
Yeah.
I'm flabbergasted by that. That was the best movie of the year.
And I agree with you on that.
Spotlight has made $32 million. Straight Out of Compton has made $39 overseas and $163 domestically. Straight Out of Compton has made over $200 million. So now my argument gets a little tougher to make, doesn't it?
And that's the problem with talking about the Oscars as opposed to the industry. I'm more interested in talking about the industry because we can talk about numbers like this. When you talk about the Oscars and actual merit of films, I would say Spotlight is the best movie of the year. I absolutely loved it.
Well, thank you for that, because then, all right, so then the emphasis, though, because this is what happens. They say, okay, we're going to fix it now. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure the blacks get nominated for more movies, for better, more roles next year. It'd be very interesting to see the nominations next year, as though more black nominations is the fix. And I don't know that that's the truth. I think the Oscars are a popularity contest, essentially. And if we've decided that we don't like Will Smith as much as we like Matt Damon this year, I don't think we have to apologize for or even explain that, right?
I think it's easy to get into the weeds with specific examples. I don't think Will Smith should have been nominated for an Oscar. I would say no, because I don't think Concussion was a very good movie. But
it wasn't a great movie, but he was really good in it.
I mean, I could list, you know, black movies from the year that should have been nominated. Movies like Creed, I think, should have gotten director and best picture. I think Beast of No Nation should have definitely gotten best picture, maybe one best picture, and a supporting actor nomination for Idris Elba. They didn't get them. But I don't think that's a really useful way to have this conversation. But I just think that it's more industry-wide and that it should be ongoing all year. It just gets clumped into this one time of the year for the Oscars.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. Let's pause here. You may have something to say about this. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. That's the voice of our producer, Griffin. And I'd like to know what you think about this conversation next on WGN. It's 1:53 on WGN. This is John. All right, Rob's got the news for you at 2 o'clock. In the next hour, the Mincing Rascals mince on a lot of things, including Sarah Palin. But listen anyway, it's a really interesting conversation. You can follow the Mincing Rascals. You can download the podcast each week. We post it at WGNplus.com, too. The boys and girls were in good form after two. We'll play some of that back. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. We're talking about Spike Lee. We're talking about the Oscars. Let's go with Mike first. You're on WGN. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Good. Thanks for calling and holding. What's your thoughts, sir?
Well, without sounding racist, because I'm not. I'm married to an Asian. And I've got a company. I've got white and black employees. They should pick their battles. And this isn't a battle. I think that's a good battle. I mean, at some point, from my point of view, it's the Smiths mad because they didn't get nominated. But where does it end? You know, 70% of football players are black. No one says anything about that, which is fine. You know, they're great. They deserve it. They made it to the field. Whether if Will Smith was better, he would have been nominated. Denzel Washington was, because he's a great actor. You know, there was an award show last week where they did a big award for him. What she should have done was what needs to be done is worry about the inner city kids. Help teach them math. Teach them the basics. And help them find jobs, because that's really what needs more than some million, you know, someone who's worth $100 million worried for their husband.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that. One of Will Smith's co-stars from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air posted a video in response to Jada's video. And she said, I find it a little disingenuous that you who have made hundreds of millions of dollars with your husband in the industry you say is unfair are now asking the rest of us who are struggling to make a living to boycott the Oscars. That doesn't help us in any way, but you are very safe in saying that, Jada. Mike, I appreciate your phone call. I'm going to go from you to Todd next on line two. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Todd Schroeder.
Thank you, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, first, Stacey Dash is she's not hurting for money. She's been able to be employed very well. But it's like I used to always say, John, and that is the problem really is segregation, and it's the bigger picture. And they're just talking about this. But if you look at the Hollywood industry, you'll find that everything, the best boys, the grips, the riggers, they are disproportionately I guess majority Americans and graphic artists. You won't find very many African Americans there. My cousin used to be a costumer, and she said there were two unions, and she held out till she could join the union that had majority white people, because the one with the majority black people didn't get any jobs. And I think that's what they're talking about, but they're talking about it on a level that is way beyond, you know, your ordinary human being.
Yeah. Todd, thanks for the phone call. A lot of busy lines here, but we got time for just one more. Let's talk to Tom on WGN. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hi, John. Before I get to my point, the caller before the last caller was basically talking about the pipeline, and we need to fill the pipeline. And we fill the pipeline with enough qualified people, eventually that all rises to the top and all these problems go away. But 12% of this country is black, 16% is Hispanic. Where are the Hispanics complaining?
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, maybe they should. I mean, I take your point, but I'm not sure that Hispanics are even less represented than African Americans. Minimizes the African Americans' argument that there's not sufficient inclusion. Maybe we will hear from some Hispanics down the road. I don't know where that conversation goes. I've been wondering about that, Tom. It's 1:57. Let's pause here. Thanks for the call. We're out of time for this hour. Lots more to talk about, including the Mincing Rascals on one of the weirdest political weeks you've ever seen. Coming up on WGN. Thank you, Rob. This is John Williams. We'll talk more about that weather story later in this hour, but just a quick mention of it. Our Roger Badish has posted a picture of him in his car on Lakeshore Drive in 2011 when it was closed because of the blizzard. Remember they said, don't go on Lakeshore Drive? Your story about New York City reminds me of this. They said, whatever you do, don't go out in the snow. So then people go out in the snow. I think there's a sort of natural human impulse. You say, really? Oh, I want to go see. I'll be okay. The fact that three lanes of traffic are frozen in snow on Lakeshore Drive, it's the most bizarre scene. And I've posted a video of that on my Facebook page, too. So if you like me on Facebook, this is an interesting memory. Boy, there was a lot of talk about who were those people on that road, and it turns out we know some of them. But if you like me on Facebook at facebook.com/KingJohn, I'm King John on Facebook, you'll see a little memory lane that might remind us a little bit of what some of the people out east are going through. So this is our Mincing Rascals segment. We normally do this at 1:30 or 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoons like this. And in this segment, we excerpt something from the podcast that we drop each week. On Friday, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune and I talk about various stories in the news. This week it included a conversation about Wi-Fi on Metra. We talked about Rahm Emanuel and Governor Rauner. We always talk a little national politics too. How can you not? Particularly with Sarah Palin in the mix this week. So we start this week on our replay with Steve Bertrand talking a little bit about who Sarah Palin is.
I don't know what her cachet is, frankly. You know, she's got no record. She has no accomplishments, but she does have a following.
It's confounding. I think that Steve is right that this helps Trump's campaign. At least it helps his bid for the nomination. I don't think that having embraced Sarah Palin like this, or having her embrace you, is good in the general election. I hate to be a name caller, but she's an idiot. I mean, her speech was just idiotic. It was like a word salad. It was, you know, talking about squirmishes.
Eric, you're in the mainstream media. Your head is spinning.
The mainstream media, the New York Times, or maybe it was the New Yorker, one of them called her speech, the endorsement speech, she's had a few, free verse poetry slam. It's ideas, it's concepts, and they're sort of melded together, but the sentence structure is bizarre.
Well, I think it speaks to it. That's what she is. She's enough. She hasn't done anything. So just her being present in her world and with some of her supporters seems to be enough. Her existence is enough.
What is her appeal? I don't align with her politically at all. And I understand the appeal of Trump. I understand the appeal of Ted Cruz. I don't understand the appeal of Sarah Palin.
You do. Well, go back to when John McCain announced her.
I didn't understand it then. She's not smart enough to be president. She's not smart enough to consult.
She gave a wonderful acceptance speech at the nomination, and it's been downhill ever since.
She's an attractive female who has all of the Republican credentials or conservative credentials. Yeah. You know, she's pro-gun and pro-family and pro-God, and she speaks truth to power. She doesn't care about political correctness. That appeals to the same crowd that wants to vote for Donald Trump, and that's why I don't see her as a great addition, because he's already got that.
But Steve is right. She takes a away from the Ted. I mean, the Ted Cruz seems to be slipping. I mean, as the polls are showing that Ted Cruz is whatever traction he had, we spoke about a week ago, he seems to be spinning his wheels a bit. I think some of it comes from this issue of whether he's a natural born citizen or not. The polls they're taking are showing that that issue is concerning to a substantial number of voters.
Right, because a substantial number of voters think Barack Obama is a Muslim. I mean, there are those people out there. The thing other that's sort of delicious about all of this is Ted Cruz has no friends in politics, in office, right? So when he's being attacked like he's being attacked, you know, when Hillary Clinton gets attacked or Donald Trump doesn't need it, but pick another one, Marco Rubio, you've got people coming in to defend him. Ted Cruz has no real defenders because, I mean, Senator Durbin's a Democrat, but as he said on our air last week, you can count on one hand the number of friends Ted Cruz has in the U.S. Senate.
That was the Saturday Night Live punchline. He says, I'm Ted Cruz and no one likes me.
But that's a feature for him. The fact that people in Washington hate him is something that he talks about proudly on the campaign trail.
I mean, it does at least paint him as an outsider. I want to go back to the language that Sarah Palin uses. I'm going to play for you a soundbite. Here's Sarah Palin's endorsement of Donald Trump.
This is what we have to remember in this very contested, competitive, great primary race. Trump's candidacy, it has exposed not just that tragic, the ramifications of that betrayal of a transformation of our country, but two, he has exposed the complicity on both sides of the aisle that has enabled it.
Would you like to diagram that sentence for me,
please? I know. I'm like somebody on the sidelines going, we need a verb. We need a verb. Give me a verb, Sarah.
She believes her presence is enough. She doesn't have to write a speech.
Donald Trump believes her presence.
Don was standing there a little awkwardly.
It is funny to see the look on Donald Trump's face because he's the guy who you are afraid what he's going to say next. And he had a look on his face like, I'm worried what she's going to say next.
What have I gotten into here? One point that she made that I thought was interesting and is going to resonate with a lot of voters, I think in Iowa anyway, is that the Republican establishment is rejecting Trump as not conservative enough. And so Palin, whose conservative bona fides are not questioned, grabs onto him and says, what they're saying, we're not conservative enough. That means that they have betrayed your values. And I think that this message is resonating with voters that, you know, they've elected a Republican majority to Congress. And what have they done? Nothing, really. When they elect conservative Republican lawmakers and they want them to advance things like, you know, opposing gay marriage, and they want them to crack down on abortion and so on, they're not getting the bang for their vote that they want. They want more hardcore conservative action. They want things to happen.
I also think we won't see Sarah, well, we will, but we'll see much less of Sarah Palin after next Tuesday. I think she comes in for the splash. Donald Trump doesn't need her in other states.
And she's dangerous. Who knows what she's going to say?
She's not helpful. I mean, you know, she talks about how her son has PTSD because of Barack Obama.
Oh, that was just disgraceful.
She didn't say that. It was disgraceful.
Well,
but she didn't say that.
Well, what did she say, John?
I'll get you the quote.
I'm sure you will, but
this is a case where the media is stitching together a story that is even better than the story they've got.
Well, tell me what she said, because my understanding is that she was saying that, yes, her son came back from was he in Afghanistan or Iraq?
Iraq.
He ended his tour in 2008. Last week, he punched his girlfriend and threatened to commit suicide with an AR-15 assault rifle while intoxicated. He was arrested on 3 counts. And when she was up on the stage and Donald Trump suggested to her that she talk about this, she said how our troops are going through hell, coming back, in her word, hardened, and that Barack Obama isn't a chief executive who respects or understands what these guys are going through. She did not say, Barack Obama gave my son PTSD. She walked you right up to that line, but she did not say that.
The implication was that because Barack Obama doesn't respect returning veterans, which I think is nonsense, that this exacerbates the problem that people like Track Palin have, and that this makes them violent. And war veterans reacted very strongly against this thing. That, you know, to imply that people with PTSD are dangerous like this is horrible, and to imply that because of a foreign policy their ailment is made worse.
Yeah, and you know, there's just something about the message of personal responsibility for others, but not us, in this too. And I haven't sorted that out exactly, but she's the one who says everyone else should be standing up by their bootstraps in all of this, and she's blaming her son's bad behavior on something exterior.
You're right about that. Well,
if we're so worried everyone should have a gun except for mental health problems, did she not say on the campaign trail that her son is suffering from mental health issues? Why does he have access to guns?
Touche, Steve. I don't have an answer for that. 3 days into the campaign, she's not even running. She's not even yet been announced as his choice for Secretary of State or something. Do you think she's working this hard for Donald Trump? Is she got an angle on
She's got to be looking for another way back into the spotlight. She's clearly not a vice presidential pick. That was a disaster for McCain. Everybody knows that. She's not a cabinet. She said she was interested in being the Secretary of Energy, I think she mentioned.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
I don't see Trump doing that. I think Trump is a smart guy. You know, I think he plays dumb sometimes on the campaign. I think he's a smart enough guy to know that she would be a disaster in any position like that.
She is a moth in search of a flame. I think she needed this endorsement more than Donald Trump did. Yeah. I think she's desperate to be heard, and this is a way for her to be heard.
She was positively vivacious. She was just bubbling with enthusiasm and energy when she was up on that stage. The next day, they even in fashion trends were talking about what she wore. She is in the unique position of being able to torpedo consecutive Republican presidential campaigns.
Well, she didn't help. I saw a delightful thing online that showed Sarah Palin wearing that thing she was wearing at the speech, and then a Christmas tree all decked out. And the thing on it was, "Who wore it better?"
I'm sorry, you guys. Listen, we're all on the same page about this, but I think if you're fair, you've got to admit she looked good. She sounded good.
She didn't sound good.
She did. That is what she sounds like. It's a little more shrill than a lot of people might like. But I'm just telling you, if you go get a Sarah Palin, that's what it looks and sounds like. And she was all of that. She didn't help Mitt Romney, but she sure didn't help John McCain.
Somebody said online, it was another thing I saw online, was if a sentence makes no sense read either forwards or backwards, it's a palindrome.
Okay, let's go home right now. That's it.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Good advice there. Okay, so 219 on WGN. That's our Mincing Rascals. You may have something to say about that. I hope so. I'll take your phone call at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. This is GN. Like me on Facebook, I'm King John there, and you'll see the video from I was surfing around, and it said that Lakeshore Drive closed in 2013, but I think the one I'm thinking of was 2011. When we had about 20 inches of snow and winds were 50, 60 miles an hour, and it shut down Lakeshore Drive. And some journalists were caught there, and there were CTA buses out there, too. I mean, it was incredible how you see three lanes of white bumps, and they're all cars, trucks, and buses.
Yeah,
and
when they had a photographer on the footbridge at North Avenue the morning after. This is the Groundhog Day blizzard in 2011.
Yeah,
and it looked like nuclear winter. Like this is what life after people would be. The Lakeshore Drive edition before the tow trucks came and took all the cars away. the fun thing that happened, and I remember. I came in the night before just because I didn't want to get caught in it,
yeah.
And I wound up being pressed into service as the news anchor on Steve and Johnny's show because the scheduled overnight news anchor couldn't make it in, and Roger was on the phone with them, and he was in near tears because he couldn't believe he got out of this. I mean, that's how frightened he was while this whole thing was unfolding.
That's the thing. People were really scared. It was frightening, wasn't it? It was terrifying for some of those people, and it was weird because you say— But you're not on the North Pole. You're on Lakeshore Drive. And I know it's a blizzard and you're in your car and it's snowy, but like literally if you got out of your car and just started walking opposite the lake, the third largest city in the United States is right there. You know,
it's surreal. Just you would see the lights of civilization just outside of your window.
Yeah, I know. But people thought, oh, I can't get there. And in fact, maybe you couldn't. Maybe you were worried about southbound traffic hitting you if you were heading northbound, or maybe you were worried that you'd, I don't know, fall into a ditch or something. But it was weird, too, because remember, they were saying it's coming. And, you know, and businesses were leaving, dismissing early, even before it got here. And some of us booked rooms that night. It was the only time in that 18 years on WGN radio that I ever stayed overnight because of the weather the next day.
Yeah, they put us all up at the Omni, as I recall.
Yeah.
On Michigan Avenue.
I stayed at the, I think we were in the Intercontinental, which was nice because that's a swell hotel. And I believe there was some arguing about prices amongst the staff and the management after that. But never mind. So we stayed downtown. And then the conversation the next few days was, should there be any sympathy or compassion for the people who got stuck on the road? because you knew not to go out there. This is New York City today or Washington, D.C. all over again. Don't go out there. And people say, really? Let's go out there and let's see. I don't think they were all gawkers on Lakeshore Drive, but you'd think you'd have sense enough to find, if you had gone up, I don't know, the Kennedy, I don't know where you're going, but if you took another route, you would not have got caught in the Lakeshore Drive blizzard. You almost ought to be embarrassed if you were in that traffic. I don't know if Roger's listening.
That was the choice that, because the school where my wife worked that day, they didn't close until the appointed time. So she left at 4 o'clock. And I remember her calling me and saying, should I take Lakeshore Drive or should I take the Kennedy? And I said, you know what? You should probably take the Kennedy. And that made all the difference because if I said take Lakeshore Drive, she would have been stuck in it.
And maybe you thought, well, I'll just zip up there. You know, I'll get on Lakeshore Drive and beat this thing, and nobody else is going to be there. I'm not exactly sure what the thought process was for the people that got caught on it that year. But a lot of us were looking at it thinking, I mean, look, WGN Radio is where it is. It's right there on Michigan Avenue. What is it, Rob? A half a mile to the lakeshore, would you say? Maybe not even that, right?
Yeah.
I'll bet it's the crow flies. It's a quarter mile.
It's pretty close.
You know, we were okay there. You know, as I recall, traffic was going up and down Michigan Avenue, and then you had Fort Gatonia just 3 football fields away.
Yeah, where Jim Cantore was using the showcase studio to go to the bathroom, and then, civilization was collapsing not too far, just a couple of blocks down the road.
That was Jim Cantore. Is it Cantoria or Cantor? One of his most famous, I think, broadcast moments was when he was out there and the thunder snow.
Yes,
hit him.
Yes.
We should find that audio. I don't know if Griffin and Krista can grab it maybe after the news at the bottom of the hour here, but he's out there doing his report on one of the morning TV network news shows, and all of a sudden he gets this blam of thunder. It was really spectacular. You remember it, right?
And he was very excited about it.
Yeah, really. It's sort of like, I don't know, if you do weather for a living, that's the home run. That's gold for you. It's 2:28. But we'll pause here. Rob's going to catch you up on the news. In the next half hour, we'll score the news in our Vibe Score segment. And let me see if I can find that soundbite for you, too. This is WGN. Griff found the audio. I'll play it for you after Rob's news here of the thunder snow in Chicago. By the way, I also just got this text message from my friend Nancy Butel. She said, John, I've been texting my girlfriend. They have been on 76, I believe, between Bedford and Pittsburgh since 7 o'clock last night, and they still can't move. The school is one of the several buses stranded leaving Washington from March for Life heading to Dubuque, but she's been sitting on the road in her car since 7 o'clock last night somewhere near Pittsburgh. Scary, 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 huh? The world-famous WGN personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white, presented in a special and one-of-a-kind way. In the 2016 2K's calendar, this is the 8th year for these highly sought-after, gorgeous calendars, and this is the first year. It's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that is completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com, scroll down to the feature section, make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar, the 2K's calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com. I still think we should prorate and discount the calendars depending on how far into the new year we are. But I suppose it's still a great value. There's still plenty of January left.
Well, I heard it was a bus been out plus cars are oh! Listen to that! Son of a... That's unbelievable! Oh, my goodness!
I remember that.
Holy smoke!
Yeah, he said holy smoke.
Just incredible!
That was...
Robbie! Twice in one storm, baby! Holy smoke!
Yeah, smoke. That's Jim Cantore from Michigan Avenue. I mean, it was right outside our radio studios, and that was in 2011, and that was his thunder snow moment. Oh, I remember that. I remember that. And I remember hearing that and just thinking, you know, it's sort of like when the world ends. If it ends in fire, it won't be like that. But if it ended in kind of a frozen thing, it would probably start like this. Thunder and lightning in a blizzard, cars frozen to Lakeshore Drive, and you had this sort of black and white scene outside. And you hear the echoes of his voice on Michigan Avenue because it was desolate. Nobody was there. It was bizarre.
I feel kind of bad for him because it sounds pretty good on the video, but I imagine it sounded a lot scarier in person. You can't possibly understand why he's freaking out so much, but I'm sure it was a bigger deal if you were there.
Plus, there's no anticipating it. You're just standing there doing a report going, boy, we have a lot of snow here in Chicago. I'm standing in a drift on Michigan Avenue. And then just bam, like a cannon goes off right next to you. So here's back to the text message I'm sharing with a friend of mine, Nancy, who I went to school with her husband, George, and she's been telling me about a friend of hers who has been stranded on the highway. They left Washington, D.C. They were headed to Dubuque. It's a March for Life group. They are stuck on the road since 7 o'clock last night. So what is it, 2:40, 2:38 here. So figuring 3 hours will be 21 hours. And they're on a school bus with kids, and the national, she says, they're in the bus with school kids. It's anxiety beyond. National Guard were supposed to be coming out to bring food and check on the people. The vehicles were stuck, so everyone had to stop. They were 7 miles back from an accident, and they're just sitting there. She's the chaperone on a bus full of kids, and it's not moving out east. Frozen on the highway. Was that when our pizza angel, was it in 2011 also? I wonder if it was, that was the blizzard. Cars were frozen on I-80 and some of the other roads, just stuck in the snow and there, you know, for 24 hours. And one of our listeners went out in her car and delivered pizzas to people on the road. She literally went in her car, got on the on-ramp, and just went to where the cars were stuck and delivered pizzas from WGN Radio. Some people thought we were crazy, and she was crazy for putting her in harm's way that way, but she managed. She was fine, and it was the funnest, craziest, most generous thing I think somebody from WGN's audience has ever done. Thank you, Pizza Angel. It's 2:39. Okay, so this is the Vibe Score segment. Let's start with this song. We are vibing the Eagles. Okay, we'll segue from that into this. Vibe Score is an app I want you to get. It's free. Go to the App Store and get something called Vibe Score, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. It's one word, Vibe Score. You get to score the news. Follow groups that are of interest to you. We'll send you stories and videos about them, and we'll ask you questions. You get to tell us how you feel about things. In the music group, the Eagles were on our mind this week. We posted a video of the Eagles and asked you what you thought of that band. They're doing very well right now. I think I brought the score down a little bit, Griffin, because I voted since you sent me the rundown.
Yeah.
I think they're at about a 94 or something like that.
It was 100.
It's very high. Kudos to you, Glenn Frey, Don Henley. Are you a fan of the Eagles? You're too young to know and care about the Eagles,
I'm a
right?
little young, and I think there's a faction of people that maybe weren't there for it or were and didn't like them back in the day that... You know, when you're the biggest band in the world, you're going to have a lot of haters, too. And I think I've known plenty of those people, and it's kind of been awkward for them, I think, in the past week. They just, like, we'll take a step back for a second. For instance, in The Big Lebowski, Jeff Bridges' character is notable for saying that he hates the
Eagles. He gets thrown
Eagles.
Out of a cab, right?
He gets thrown out of a cab because he doesn't like the Eagles, yeah. But
the cab driver has it on.
But, you know, now when you go back and listen, I think they sound pretty great. So
Our mutual friend, a man named Gary Kranak, told me all about that scene with Glee at breakfast this morning. He said the Eagles, and he's one of these, I'm going to say, music snobs. The Eagles just aren't up to his standard, and so he has no time for the Eagles. And he makes fun of me because my musical interest is very pedestrian. And I said, really? You got to hate on the Eagles? Can't you just be quiet this week about it?
I think that's the move, yeah.
That's how you play this week if you're a hater. All right, we did food and drink as a category. And National Clam Chowder Day has come and gone. I don't know if you celebrated at home. It's getting a surprisingly high score to me. It's rated 73. If you're following Food and Drink, we asked you about your affection for clam chowder. It got a 73, Griff. I'm shocked and amazed.
Yeah, I would have gone lower just because I didn't get the day off work.
I love clam chowder.
Hey, Kristen Decker. Woohoo! Hey, Deck, how are you?
Good. I rated that very highly.
Palin's endorsement. If you think she helps Donald Trump, you give it 100. If you think she absolutely kills his nomination, then you give her a 0. We asked you to vibe Sarah Palin's endorsement of Donald Trump, and she's getting a 34. I think that's absolutely wrong. I would give it, 65. I think it's a duplication. A lot of Trump supporters are Palin supporters, but I don't think she hurts him. I think she's... There are people that still like Sarah Palin. I gave her a 65. I think what you're seeing there, 34, is just people don't like Sarah. But we specifically said in the question, this isn't vibe Sarah Palin. It's do you think she helps or hurts? Do you guys see my point? How did you guys score this one?
I think she hurts. I scored it low because I roll my eyes at Donald Trump and I roll my eyes at Sarah Palin. So put the two together and I really roll my eyes.
I saw a voter say she helps. She might help in the primary. She hurts in the general if he gets there. And that's what I think. I kind of agree with that. So it just depends on what kind of long term you're thinking of. I said about a 30 also.
Did you see that they're making a sequel maybe to Making a Murderer? They're going to actually do a part two and follow up on it further still. There's a radio station in Wisconsin that's taking some of their audio and doing a reverse Making a Murderer, showing that, in fact, Steve Avery is guilty of murder. We asked you to vibe Making a Murderer.
If you think Stephen Avery is guilty.
Is guilty, right. And we didn't say innocent, by the way, because that's important. We said, do you think he's guilty or not? And the score is 66, meaning you think he is probably guilty of the murder. Go ahead, Griff.
I said 50. I don't like people watching these shows and assuming that they're experts on a certain case. Like the same, that's true. The same thing happened with Serial
last year.
What is the
fun of watching either of? Yeah, that's what's the point of doing Serial if you're not going to have opinion about it?
There are so many great memes where it's like before I went to bed, I watched Making a Murder, and then I woke up with a law degree.
Exactly. That's
The person in Wisconsin who's doing the unmaking of a murderer is my old college radio partner, Dan O'Donnell at WISN.
No, yeah.
And I talked to him this week, and I said, having fun slaying internet detectives all week? And he said it's a full-time job now for him.
Yeah, I'll bet he's taking a lot of heat, too, from people. Right, Rob?
He is. No, I'll look at his Twitter timeline. It's, you think this, jerk? And it's like, well, Dan actually has a law degree, so listen to him on this one.
I love true crime documentaries, too. I've loved, there's one called The Thin Blue Line that got somebody out of jail back in the day, and The Paradise Lost about the West Memphis Three. I love those so much, but the new phenomenon is people watch it, and then... I think you should just watch it and be interested and just leave it there. But people come out into the world and then, like, think they know everything about it. I think it looks a little silly.
Well, it was 10 parts. If I had to reinvent that app, Griffin, I would not allow you to vote 50. You have to take a stand.
I think that takes a stand almost more than, like, a 55.
Yeah, I agree.
In the movie category, we asked you to give us your vibe score for The Revenant. I said it's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen. I think it's a little thin. What did you score it, Griff?
I saw it yesterday. I gave it a 74. I agree with you pretty much entirely. It was, I almost didn't care that I wasn't that interested in the story, especially by the end, because it was just so beautiful to look at.
What did they call it? Pain porn or something like that?
I don't know if you want to go throwing that around.
Well, but, yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's really just one brutal scene after another for 2.5 hours.
But it's well done. I thought it was way better than I thought it would be.
Deck, did you watch The Revenant
yet? I haven't
yet?
Seen that one yet.
Rob, you haven't seen it yet either, have you?
I have not. I've just heard there's a bear-dropping scene.
Yeah, that is getting way too much play. Go see this movie and just let that scene happen. It's tough, but it's not as bad as you think it might be. By the way, last weekend was the weekend of the Green Bay Packers coin flip flop. And we asked you, I'm trying to remember exactly how we worded it. I think if you scored 100, it would be that... I'm trying to remember what the question on that one was, Griff.
The coin didn't flip, so they reflipped it.
Right.
100 meant you agreed with that move. 0 meant you disagree. They shouldn't have done that. They should have gone with the first non-flip.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Which is where I was. I was very much, you don't have to reflip it. It didn't spin in the air. You didn't know that. It's still a 50-50 proposition. So I said no reflip, but most folks were saying that they should have reflipped it as they did. Okay, got it. We asked you to... Vibe Sean Penn's piece in Rolling Stone. And congratulations, Sean, with Palin and Trump and all of the controversy out there this week. You got the lowest score. He gets a 10.
Seems a little high.
So there's that. Deck, you got to read this piece. It goes faster than you might imagine. It's very interesting reading. It just isn't about what it purports to be about, that's all.
So what do you give it then?
I don't remember, but I could tell you that I thought, as we discussed last week on the show with Jane Kirtley from the Scylla Center, she's brilliant on things media, and I think it's terrible. I think it was really embarrassing for even Rolling Stone to publish it. I thought it was, I don't know if it was journalism, but if it was, it was bad journalism. So I gave it a low score.
I don't feel bad for him, but I almost do when actors try to step out and do something other than act. It's like, no, we just want you just read the
just
lines.
Just stay in your box.
Yeah, exactly.
Make your millions.
Honestly, that's
acting.
How I,
but that
now
is
try
the
and be something
that is,
else.
That's the unfair thing we do to Angelina Jolie and the rest of them. So if they want to be an ambassador for a cause or immerse themselves in something, how does anybody get to be an expert? You have some time, you have some intellect, and you immerse yourself in it. And a lot of them are, and then they testify before Congress, and we all roll our eyes. And I try to resist that impulse, you know? I hear your point, Griff. I'm with you on Sean Penn, but could we all agree that if some famous person wants to take up a cause, we won't only try and put them in the actor box?
Well, we tried to give Tom Cruise a sliver of a doubt with that whole Scientology thing, and look where that's gotten us.
Yeah, he just turned out to be cuckoo bananas.
Can we talk about the one vibe that I'm really, like, the most important one
okay,
to
okay, hold
me?
On. I'll bring the music back. Go ahead, Nick.
Fashion.
Okay, which is the one that struck your nerve?
Man braid.
I saw that and specifically did not bring that up because it's
what?
Not just the man bun, it's the man braid now.
What'd you vibe it?
Like 9. I mean, what did you give it, Decker?
Probably like a 3.
Thank you.
Wait till you see mine. That's gonna come up.
You're sporting one, Griff?
Oh, sure.
Oh, no, I gave it a 12. I'm sorry. There a little high.
Same thing. Vibe Score. It's one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. Download the app for free at the App Store, and then we'll see how you scored the news next week. We'll talk to the boys a little bit about the sports scene next here on WGN. Mark Harmon doesn't need this stuff because he's just so dang pretty and young still. He doesn't use probably any of the products.
Actually, I use like 3 products a day now, John, and that's up from 1 at the start of the year, and the year is not that old. Not even into February? So it's fading fast over here, but I'm doing my best.
I don't know if I want to know, but what are the products you use in the morning there?
Well, I've got a dual lotion attack. We got one for the face and one for the body.
I do that too.
Well, are you a religious everydayer?
I have to be, or I turn into a snake.
Right.
I have the worst dry skin ever.
Steve and Johnny were talking one night on the radio, and Steve had this statistic which has stuck with me ever since. The average American uses 7 different items in the morning on their head and face. 7 different things. So I guess toothpaste would be one. Maybe shampoo, maybe soap.
I probably should incorporate some more toothpaste into my life.
Yeah, shaving cream could be one. Lotion, I don't know that I can get to 7. Hair product, yeah, I use a lot of that. So maybe I'm at 6 already myself now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm over 7.
Yeah. Well, you're a handsome man. What are you guys talking about this afternoon? Now, what are you going to do?
Well, we got a lot on the plate here, John. For one, Adam Hogue was very vicious on Twitter earlier in the week to one Derrick Rose.
Vicious?
Well, I thought it was unfair.
What did he say? What was he saying?
What was the exact tweet Adam?
John, I think what I did was quote the head coach.
Well, that's unkind.
I know. It was very vicious.
You think you're getting beat up for a wrong reason? You're just quoting the coach? What did the coach say? I mean, what was your point?
Well, Derrick Rose, Wednesday they played the Warriors, by far the best team in the league.
Yeah.
And Derrick Rose spent half of the quarter on a stationary bike because he's out of shape. And during that time period, the Warriors, it went from a close game to the Warriors up about 20. So very fairly, like everyone else in the world, I questioned why Derrick Rose wasn't in the game. Mm-hmm. And after the game, Fred Hoiberg, the head coach, explained that Derrick's conditioning isn't where it needs to be.
Fred Hoiberg confirmed Derrick Rose asked to come out of the game in the first quarter because he was tired, was the tweet by Adam Hogue. And, you know, I just expect more from Adam myself, John, that he wouldn't be, you know, there's so many guys in media that would pile on. Adam's a class act. I would think he would understand that, oh, the guy got a little bit tired, so he went out for a minute, and then he came back to lead the team with 29 points. Respectable game. I mean, you can't really fault a guy for leading the team with 29, can you?
Your witness.
See, this is where it's going to go. We're going to get heated very early in the show.
Teddy Greenstein also blew up Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, and we wanted to salute Teddy.
For that alone, huh? I stayed up late last night and watched the Golden State game. They're fun to watch.
Oh, they really are.
It's just like they're playing a different game than everybody else. It's almost unfair that they got both those guys, the Splash Brothers, you know.
Didn't Steph have 2 buzzer beaters last night?
Yeah, he did. One, I think they called back, though. That was the three-quarter court one. And then I think to end the second quarter, must have been the end of the first half, he had one from half court that he banked in. And he had it all the way. It was funny.
I fought the Warriors being a great team last year despite winning the championship in 67 wins, and I just look at them like, how could you compare them to, you know, the Bulls of the 90s or the Lakers or Detroit, even Celtics? But they're getting there now. I mean, this is a historic team that you got to give them their props. What do you think about LeBron and David Blatt and all that, John Williams?
Oh, I thought it was we all laughed out loud when we heard that LeBron said he had nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
It was like, give me a break. I mean, if LeBron didn't make the call this year or this week, he's been making the call since he was hired. So I think he finally got what he wanted. But they do have the best record in the East, right?
They do, and I don't know, powerful people get to be a part of decisions, don't they? I mean, why should he have to apologize? Why can't he just stand up and be like, yeah, of course I had something to do with it. I'm LeBron damn James.
Exactly. Next question. All right, well, you guys have a real good show. I'm already interested, so we'll be listening, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Absolutely.
Thank you, fellas. I wish, let's see here, I need to take one more commercial break, and then we'll get you into the news on WGN.